We are going to start the last session in the afternoon, last but not least, and we are going to start with the Heikki Immonen, with a lecture called Experiential Broadcasting and Transnational Evening of Sounds. So, I give you the floor.
Thank you, Jean-Paul. Welcome to listen to Experimental Broadcasting and Transnational Evening of Sounds. Very glad to be here, very nice to meet colleagues outside Zoom, and today we have a huge topic here to cover, Experimental Broadcasting and Transnational Evening of Sounds, but I'm going to be very practical. I'm going to introduce you a case study and concentrate on one Finnish radio program and tell you how we could perhaps refine that towards the transnational evening of sound. So we have a lot of topics to discuss, so perhaps we should just get going. What's going to happen next? First, as an example of experimental broadcasting, I have this Finnish radio program, Evening of Sounds. First, I'm going to tell a few words about it. Then some theoretical background in context of radiogenic or radiophonic programs. Then we take a look on requests on sounds and sonic environments that were sent to Evening of Sounds program by radio listeners. And then, of course, I have a few sound samples for you to listen. Of course, when we are talking about media and media memories, we have to think of how media is also not only representing memories, but it's also constructing media memories. And so radio and television will be involved, and how different radio and television programs have made people cause memories to them. Then we're going to take a quick look on those. Then a few words on how archives, how Finnish broadcasting companies' archives were utilized in this program. And finally, we are going to move towards BR Transnational Evening of Sound. So there are quite a few things to cover, so let's get going. Finnish Broadcasting Company aired a calling program on environmental sounds from year 2013 to 2019, once or twice a year. A three-hour live program called Äänien Ilta, which translates as Evening of Sounds, has approximately 220,000 listeners, representing 3.7% of the country's population of 5.4 million. Listeners were encouraged to request environmental sounds, share their memories and experiences with the radio audience and the studio personnel. Sound requests were received via email and over the telephone and fulfilled with the help of sound archives and present-day soundscape recordings. The show was broadcast with the help of a show host and two or three visiting scholars. And as you can see, there is Helmi Järviluoma, yours truly, and Jukka Mikkola, who was a studio host from the Finnish Broadcasting Company, and we are there preparing ourselves for the future broadcasting. The program was founded on the basic principle of the radio, to broadcast sound content which are emotionally and intellectually meaningful to listeners. It also offers a platform for discussion and reflections on environmental sounds which are produced and interpreted under specific historical conditions. A unique feature of the program is that the audience and the show hosts are listening to sounds and soundscapes attentively, unlike in everyday soundscapes. Every surroundings. This sharing collective and personal sound memories and narratives sustains socio-cultural history of sound. So, how this all relates to radiogenic programs? The program content can be evaluated with the help of a concept of radiogenic. It can refer to texts that are ideally or especially suited to radio, or that utilize to the maximum the distinctive qualities of radio, or that display an optimum aesthetic use of sound. Radiogenic refers to aspects that are only evident in the recording and broadcasting of sound that reveal or express an encounter with something unique. In the early history of the terrestrial radio, the radiogenic approach was represented by sound art experiments and reportages. Zsigavertov established a laboratory of hearing in 1916 in order to produce musical literary audio montages and documentaries. In year 1925, he invented the concept of Radio Pravda, Radio Truth, sound recording on film, enabled reproducing environmental sounds and working them into an acoustic montage of working life. End of quote. This could be broadcast as a radio newspaper in order to develop a radio ear, thus advocating an auditory bond among the international proletariat. As far as I remember, it was also present in Giuseppe's work the day before yesterday, wasn't it? Radio Pravda. Okay. Also, composer Paul Hindemith was active in promoting and executing radio reportages in German radio under the name Disoriented Microphone. A reporter let the microphone pick up the sounds of Frankfurt Street railway stations and docks without script or sound effects. Also, it needs to be remembered that wireless broadcast aroused immense public interest as a medium that had enabled a participation in a new sensory experience. And of course, we all know Walter Benjamin's work for German radio in Frankfurt, in Berlin, including 80 to 90 broadcasts for children. Evening of Sound positions itself between conventional radio programs such as music call-in shows, citizens' forums, and special program. Sounds are retrieved and requests fulfilled on air. The diverse opinions and narratives are listened to, and scholarly topics of soundscape studies, ethnology, and folklore research are introduced. Furthermore, like music phone-ins, the program is enabling the sharing of the soundscape-related preferences and experiences with other radio listeners. The sounds broadcast are representations, reflections, and framings of sounds and soundscapes, and can be referred to as sound mirror. Instead of being objective and neutral, the program reflects an image of sound to the listener, frames reality, and makes us more intensively aware of. Yeah.
That's a great show.
Perfect timing. Okay. Yes, it's beautiful. Shall we continue? Okay, how about the requests then? Here are the most sound requests most wanted. There's thresher, there's house-powered reaping machine, there's steam engine, there's Zetor tractor. Zetor tractor was especially popular among the listeners. Then there's Wickstrom engine, which is used for agricultural, to give power for major agricultural tools in the 40s and 50s. Then we have a separator, which separates cream from milk. Then we have a sound called telephone wires singing. I'll get to this back later. Then we have a sound of hand milking, sound of sight being sharpened, and then we have sound of thunderstorm. The sounds were frequently related to collective and personal memories from childhood and adolescence and soundscapes that no longer exist. You can actually call them generational sound memories. In the evening of sounds, the most wanted sounds originate from the agricultural environment. This can be partly explained by the demographics of the listener and late urbanization of the Finnish society compared to other Western European countries, taking place in a relatively quick pace in the 1960s. This suggests that radio listeners have personal experience on framing or field work. Quite interestingly, the sounds and soundscapes are not related to a given environment per se, but to machinery needed to perform certain agricultural tasks. So let's take a closer look at two of the requests. First, the Czechoslovakia manufactured Zetor with distinctive sound was especially popular. In this description, The ancient sound was characterized as something which can be interpreted as Protestant ethics, referring to hard work and discipline. The sound had not only aesthetic but even patriotic qualities. And the text sample goes like this. The post for Finland was built on it. It was used for plowing the fields and rock removal to tow away the logs from the forest in the winter. It was used for hauling the hay and for the transporting to milk churns. It represents the active and hard work for the writer, and the sound of the zetor is this.
No niin, sinne meni meidän zetori. Oliko se tuttu kaksiviitainen?
Sinne päin taisi olla liikkeellä koko ajan, kun se on suhteellisen sukkela se sytkytys siinä. Että, mutta kuitenkin kuulosti zetorilta.
No, se
on... Ja sen pitää muistaa, että...
So you could actually hear, it was a, this was a sample from the actual program. You could hear the show host talking to the person or the radio listener who had requested to hear the sound of the radio, and he was actually describing the sound that it was exactly what he wanted to hear, but it sounded a bit too fast for his taste. So this is one of the basic problems that we usually face, if you want to call it a problem, because it's people have a certain representation or certain memory of certain sounds, and they hardly ever meet the ones that we broadcast, because the memory is way, way much stronger. But usually, after a couple of words and a little discussion, we usually end up in very, very good results. So another disappeared and often requested sound was named telephone wire singing. This is quite different. The sound is a result of a metal telephone wire strung between telephone poles. It made a distinctive sound on cold and quiet winter nights. In mildly windy weather conditions of the metallic wire started to vibrate. The transmission of the acoustic energy through a medium pole could be listened to more closely by placing the ear against the wooden telephone pole. The listener made this conscious effort at night, which seemingly further enhanced the experience. And the text goes like this. Sound of the telephone wires was part of my childhood in the 1960s. It reminds me of full moon and cold weather. Their sound was empowering and soothing at the same time. Sometimes the howling and singing of the wire attached to the wall kept me awake. When the time was right, I liked to walk on the snow crossed on a full moon from one pole to another and press my ear against the wooden pole to listen to it sing. So in the winter night, you could actually, in the 50s or in the 60s, you could hear this kind of sounds in Finnish countryside. So this also tells a story of how technological improvements and digitalization changes the soundscape. Contemporary coated wires are not making sounds like the metallic ones, and gradually the mobile phones replace the landline telephones, thus silencing the wires altogether. Okay, there's the tractor coming one more time. So, media memories. Of course, several requested sounds were related to Finnish Broadcasting Company's program content or signals used in radio broadcasting. Broadcast call signs, time signals and voices of the familiar radio announcers have become part of the media memory because they were heard on a daily basis. Since the founding of the Finnish Broadcasting Company in 1926, they have constructed an identifiable soundscape of the radio, including announcing the exact time for radio listeners with different time signals. In Europe, the use of broadcast call signs with distinctive signals was established during the early years of public service broadcast stations to differentiate broadcasters from each other. Easily recognizable melodies were selected as call signals. On your left-hand side is a chart from the year 1937, including a brief description and notations of pre-World War II signals in Europe. It reveals that melodies broadcast on 47 stations consist of opera melodies and folk songs, excluding Northern Italy and Vilna, then part of Poland, which broadcast Nightingale Song and Cuckoo, respectively. I think Raiko mentioned also the sound of the cuckoo being used in broadcasting in Slovenia. Also, the announcements on marine weather or announcements for seafarers represented safety and feeling of continuity for many radio listeners. Repetitive reading, peaceful rhythm, clear articulation, and the ritual nature of the semantic contents resembled the act of almost meditative listening. We got a call from a radio listener who studied, I think, in the 70s or in the 80s in German Democratic Republic. She remembered that when she was homesick behind the Iron Curtain, she used to listen to marine weather to cure her homesickness. So, Evening of Sounds made use of the present day soundscape recordings as program content by research project carried out by the Finnish Society for Acoustic Ecology. And of course, we were using FBC Sound Archives, founded in 1926. It was originally designed for the needs of the radio plays. Then the Foley effects for the radio plays were performed manually and in real time in radio studios with different mechanical devices, as you can see in the upper picture. Sound effects were collected first on lacquer or instantaneous discs. Later, a specific sound archive was founded. The professional use of magnetic tape and tape recorders of 1950s helped the collection of environmental sounds and made their end use more diverse compared to lacquer discs. Currently, there are 80,000 sound effects in the FBC sound effect collection, which were put to use in Evening of Sounds. We broadcasted sounds of horse races, sounds of the old diesel engine trains, drill in the Finnish army, biting and chewing an apple, Maxim machine gun, styrofoam cutting, Commodore 64's keypad, and so on and so on. What is interesting here is that archived sounds or soundscapes were not meant to be listened to attentively or broadcast as such, but instead support the radio play and other narratives in radio content. Also, the program was able to prove its public service responsibilities by fulfilling the challenging sound requests on the radio, such as the sound of a purring cat requested by a radio listener who happened to be allergic to pets. So, 2H BER Transnational Evening of Sounds. What's going to happen next? The BER team will depart from this radiophonic or radiogenic program, Evening of Sounds, upgrading it to an international level and highlighting sound memories of underrepresented groups such as the very oldest population, paying special attention to the acts of remembering and how sound memories are narrated. We start by collecting memories by doing interviews in three care homes for elderly people for the radio program. There's an ethnomusicologist, Tom Western, and his quote, "Radio is less a thing or an apparatus than it is an ethnographic site." I think this holds true if we think of the whole process of collecting and broadcasting and archiving sounds. It definitely can be, radio can be called as an ethnographic site. And also, to my opinion, we are again talking about metaphor or sound mirror here. What we are doing actually, how we thinking and making our choices, how we are reflecting and how we are framing the past that people are sharing with us. And of course, this also includes how we archive the collected material and how this collected material will be available for wider public if this is considered to be a necessary thing. So, a very small print, so I won't go too much into detail there. We start by organizing hybrid workshops with people in Serbia and in Slovenia early next year, and also write an article about this, where we end up with our project. And I'm going to wrap up with this Terry Eagleton's quote on Walter Benjamin in London Review of Books, saying, "It is the past that is incomplete and the present that has a chance to bring it to fruition." So thank you for attention. In case you're interested in reading the whole story behind this presentation, you can check out Evening of Sounds, Auditory Cultures in Radio Calling Programs, which was published in a compilation called Sound Media Ecology, edited by Milena Drumeva and Randall Jordan. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Heikki. Thank you also to open the research to the international part of it. It's great.
You're welcome. I have an extra sound if you
if you want. Sure.
Do you want to hear? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Just in case, as we all know, sounds have always aesthetic dimensions, and this is my all-time favorite. To put a long story short, we organized a writing competition called 100 Finnish Soundscapes, and we asked people to send memories or stories of sounds that they consider meaningful. And people sent lots of descriptions, and later we went to fieldwork and talked with people and documented these sounds. And this is one of my favorites, and I'm also very kind of keen on playing it in public. I don't know. Yes. It has such a beautiful sound, and the suggestion itself goes like this: when the first, it's called throwing pebbles on ice, right? When the first proper frost night had covered the home lake with thin layer of ice, a group of young boys gathered after school or on weekend mornings on the beach to throw stones. When you threw and slid a round-edged stone to a pristine ice, you could hear an echoing, twanging and bouncing sound which enthralled the little boys forever. With almost no friction, a stone could slide even 100 meters before dropping onto water. I tried this a couple of years ago, and it's still very fun. And it sounds like this. Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot. That's great. Let's open the discussion. Yes, Giuseppe.
Okay, thanks, Jaime. The tractor, well, the wool presentation triggered me a memory. When I was in the country home of my grandmother, the same place of the radio, in summertime, during harvest, June, arrived, I remember every year, this big tractor. The name was Orsi Testa Calda. It was a hot hat Orsi. And I remember there was just there to, I don't know what the way, you know, when you pull the blah, blah, okay, I don't know exactly the technique, but all the, you have the blé, le blé, comment on dit blé in English? Yeah? Okay. Sorry, but the important thing is that arrived in the court, stay maybe 2-3 days. All countrymen arrived with le blé, and there was a motor, an engine that with the one big cylinder, and I remember they put a fire to trigger, and then it started to this. It was really very slow because it was like 10-liter cylinder, yeah. And they make it very slowly with the connection to work on the. That's this memory because was the harvest moment, was the end of summer, and I don't know if it was in the 60s. So I don't know if for you is the same because it was not a normal tractor. Was a special tractor. They was a nomad in the old houses. To do this job, but now I check on the internet what's the English translation.
It is probably the thresher what you are talking about. It's the machine to use to get rid of the to collect the seeds from the grain from the. Help me out with this one. You're from countryside. Yeah, thresher. It's separating the seeds from the come on, yeah, corn. Yeah.
The grain of wheat that is separated.
Exactly.
From the other parts.
Exactly.
So
yes.
Country people arrive at the border. Now it's automatic that you go in there now.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Exactly.
And arrive at this big machine that permits to separate the grain of wheat from the lula.
Yeah.
And I remember that this is a ritual moment because we wait, okay, tomorrow we arrive, stay there for one day, maybe 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this noise. It's very, very strong,
It's funny because in the old days it seems that it's got something to do with the autumn and people gathering together to do something which is, you know, very crucial and very important for the community. Because when we collected those sound memories and sound stories in 100 Finnish soundscape, there were lots of descriptions of how this all was done by hand without machines. In the 40s and the 30s, and there were certain kind of tools to use. You are actually beating these grains out of the other material, and you had to have a certain kind of rhythm in order to make it work, because there were several people around this place, and you had to do it in very close collaboration with other and very very strictly and you know, do it in a proper way. And there was a very distinctive sound that came out of it, and very very fast. I probably have it somewhere here, but I just don't know where to find it at this point. But it seems that it's very much connected to those crucial moments and very. Important seasons of the agricultural society and community.
Any question, remarks? Maybe I will have a question. When you at the beginning you emphasized the fact that there was a kind of gap between people's memory of sound and the recording themselves.
Yeah.
So do you have any reflection about this gap and how we are missing something in the recording, if we regard it to the memories, or what is?
I think the main point is that you have a certain image of a sound in your head, and you have heard it in like Giuseppe just described, in certain circumstances. and the sound samples that we played, in some, not in all cases, but sometimes they were perhaps recorded from other place. Then maybe it was too close for the treasure, for instance. I remember one caller telling that, okay, this sounds like a treasure, but the microphone was too close. Because, of course, in your memory, there's the sound source and there's also the ambience. There was one particularly beautiful description of this, how this person listened to the several threshing machines from up the hill, and he could listen to them all at the same time, and he was describing quite vividly and beautifully all this effect and how he suddenly understood, you know, something which was larger than life for himself. And then when we played for him the sound of the treasure, and he said, okay, it sounds like the same, but then again, it's, you have a mic very way, way too close to the machine. And as far as I understand, that is the gap between the memory and the recording itself. So you always have your personal memories and meanings connected to the sounds. And they are very hard to replicate, if impossible.
Yes, Pascal.
Bien, essayez de poser une question, mais à condition que vous traduisiez, parce que
je
ne vais pas y arriver en anglais, et c'est avec les bribes que je comprends. Mais j'aimerais poser une question sur le rapport entre la mémoire et le faire mémoire, c'est-à-dire la question de l'enregistrement sonore comme témoignage objectif, entre guillemets, comme objet sonore qui permet d'enregistrer un état du paysage sonore dans la tradition de Murray Schafer, etc. Et la question que, me semble-t-il, pose à demi-mot Giuseppe quand il dit, mais moi, le tracteur, ce qui me marque, c'est l'amorce du moteur qui commence, etc., donc qui inaugure un temps. Et là, je l'interprète, alors à défaut, c'est peut-être pas du tout ça, mais je pose au moins cette question-là, c'est que peut-être que le moment pertinent qui fait mémoire, en tout cas chez toi, mais moi je le partage, j'entends très bien ce que tu dis, je crois, malgré que je n'ai pas les mots, c'est précisément l'amorce de ce son-là dans le cas du tracteur, lorsqu'on entend la moissonneuse-batteuse qui se met en branle, parce que c'est des très gros cylindrés, des moteurs de temps et des choses qui, par ailleurs, ont disparu, quoi. Et je le rapprocherai de ce que nous, on a cherché à faire au Cresson jadis, pour signifier, non pas des temps, donc moins la question de la mémoire, que celle de l'espace, de l'identité par rapport au territoire. Et je pense à ce qu'on a développé sur la notion de carte postale sonore, c'est-à-dire comment sélectionner des sons qui sont a priori signifiants, plus signifiants que d'autres, pour faire paysage, et non pas être dans la tradition du paysage réaliste et de l'enregistrement hi-fi, le meilleur possible, le plus fidèle possible, mais dans celle d'une restitution qui est une composition qui passe par du montage, au sens où on en discute ici, pour reconstruire un effet de mémoire. Mais en ne faisant pas croire qu'on se rappelle vraiment, mais que la mémoire est toujours une construction, ce qui me semble aussi avoir à voir avec les thématiques qu'on discute depuis hier. C'est simple à traduire.
Merci beaucoup, Pascal. So I'm supposed not to translate. There will be in order for you to answer. So I think there was like two different parts. Pascal was asking the relationship between memory and doing memory, mm-hmm. And referring to Giuseppe's experience. He was telling us before what brought the memory was the starting sounds of what's happening. So. How can we produce some memory from the starting sequence of the sound you're recording, and maybe that's a kind of a start to make memory with the beginning of sound. So that was one thing, and also Pascal was referring to another thing that we called sonic postcards, the idea that some sounds would be more able than others to produce memory. And so maybe the question was, if we want to work on the production of memory or souvenir, maybe we don't have to rely that much on a kind of a realistic way to deal with sound, but more to work on the kind of reworked or specific montage of sound. So not to try to reach the most realistic part of memory, but more like a kind of a reconfiguration of sound.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think there was these two parts of the role of the starting point of the memory, how does it make memory, and then also how do you deal with the way to work with sound if you want to produce memory with this idea of sonic Pascal.
Thank you. It's very, very good questions. I think you could start with making memories sort of in artificial way. People who have studied film sound are probably very keen on and very good in this respect. Mm-hmm. And I took a course on film sound many, many years ago, and probably these procedures have changed quite a bit. But then again, when you're talking to professionals who are working with this kind of material, it's amazing how different sound sources are when they are combined to actual film narration. And mm-hmm. so in that sense, they are definitely artificial. And so I think it depends where you want to use those sounds and how you want to create memory. And if you want to create memory, I think the best ones would be, or the easiest part to do that is when people are remembering something that they had already heard from the media, because that is exactly the sound that these people are remembering. The trouble here is that people change. It's if I have heard something when I was 5 or 6 years old, I'm not the same person what I was then. So now I'm 50 something. So there's 50 year gap, and I have all the stuff in my living experience that is constructing and changing this memory that I heard when I was 5 or 6 years old. So in that sense, we could say almost that it's almost impossible to reproduce a memory in mm-hmm. sound, because it's like flowing water; it's never the same. So in that sense, it's very, very difficult.
The role of the starting point of the in order to produce some souvenir, like Giuseppe was saying, is like when you start hearing some part of the soundscape. I mean, the starting point would be special in order to produce memory or to...
Definitely. And also one point, what we found very interesting in making Evening of Sounds and being people who are very much in anthropology and very much in cultural studies, almost more important than the sound itself, is how it's being narrated and what kind of meanings people are connecting to this sound. So that was perhaps the best part of the whole program, because people started telling more memories and issues, whatever came to my mind, when especially Helmi was very good in interviewing people online. I kind of tried to stay away from it for some reason. I like interviewing people, but for some reason when it's live, I don't feel very comfortable there. But then again, it was, you know, you just learned new things every time. And also when you're playing sounds to people, also this is perhaps one of the crucial part of when you are dealing with sounds and memories. When you play sounds to people start to remember things that they didn't know that actually existed. Mm-hmm. So you're actually evoking memories. In that sense, we are actually talking about the same issue. So when you're playing the songs to people or playback songs to people, they actually start to construct memories themselves. So in that sense, we are talking about the same issue. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Heikki, for this very nice paper. And yeah, I would just confirm that the Pascal's questions were very good. And I would say that what you didn't mention is that the atmosphere of the program was very interesting because Jukka Mikkola is a kind of he's making the sound art program in the Finnish radio, and he has a reputation of being very avant-garde and very funny guy. And so the atmosphere in the studio was really light and joyful. And I was astonished to hear that also very, I mean, youngsters listened to the program as well. Even if the callers happened to be very often from the older population. Even if, of course, people of all ages were calling, but I think that was, he managed to create a very light atmosphere, so they were not insulted, even if we would by accidents play a wrong sound. they would be very understanding, and they would sort of, I thought that was one very good point of the program. But I would ask you, Heikki, that one thing that we were continuously astonished was the fabulous sound archive. Oh, maybe I should take this away. The fabulous sound archives of the radio. So they had really been recording, I think from 30s, especially 30s, for the radio plays. Yeah. And they had been, all the time the radio had these people going around and collecting sounds. And I'm just asking what will happen now when I don't think such things happens anymore, at least to a very big extent. So what is going to happen to this kind of programs? We had an archival assistant there, so people would call and they would be running and finding the sound. And what was so amazing that they most often found the most peculiar sounds they found. And it was amazing. And I'm just asking, what do you think, what is going to happen now?
I think we need
Can we have this after 100 years? Because no one is collecting the sounds anymore.
That's a very good question. And what you said about the atmosphere in the studio, I totally agree with you that it was very... The atmosphere was very light and very discursive, and even debating. And now that we mentioned that most of the sounds or most of the requested sounds were from the agricultural era and from the 50s and from the 60s, Helmi, you mentioned today about two kinds of nostalgia, which is restorative and reflective. And as far as I'm concerned, we were definitely, you know, reflective, reflectively nostalgic people there. So we didn't try to find the exactly right sound for the exactly right tractor engine. So it was, you know, the purpose of the program was somewhere else. But there definitely is something worth checking out on the future of the archives, because I don't know if it's being if the sounds are being collected anymore, at least to that extent what it used to be in the 50s, in the 60s. So it is a huge and vast archive that should be, you know, taken good care of also in the future.
So let's stop here. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.